The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Are we on? All right, let's go. We are back, and I'm joined now by this fucking guy. Senator Cruz, gun violence has become an epidemic in this country, yet your party continues to offer little more than thoughts and...
Look, all of us have had people who've lost loved ones, and then the first thing you do when someone has lost a loved one is you reach out and say, hey, I'm lifting you up in prayer. I'm praying for you, your family.
Yeah, that's cute. But with all due respect, prayers don't stop these horrific tragedies. And should you really be sending out any more thoughts? I mean, you barely have any coming in to begin with. Because you're dumb.
And the modern day left is more and more extreme. They have this bizarre antipathy to God.
The left is extreme?
Well, it seems the modern day right is more interested in firearms than in children's safety, veterans, health care. You know, fashion and moisturizing, obviously.
But the Democrats' proposal, every time, is always the same, which is take away guns.
Damn, it's scary just to check the news on your phone when we're living in a war zone. What, again? Jeez, not again, please. How can there be such nonchalance from Republicans? Here they come again with their favorite response. Thoughts and prayers. Tweet your corny last respects. Screw the laws and background checks. Who needs common sense? Sing a psalm like Pence. Thoughts and prayers. That would be appropriate if they all were running Hallmark stores. Thoughts and prayers won't save our lives. So go shove yours.
May God's peace be with you.
This whole country's in the shitter. What would Jesus post on Twitter? Every day looks like a scene from Private Ryan. What they're selling, I ain't buying.
Here's the situation. It's the gun-free school zones. Those are the biggest problems.
That ain't it, girl. Cut the shit, girl. Seems this playbook's the GOP's open fire. And cue the choir. And Lindsay's back on his knees. For thoughts and prayers. Who needs rational reform? Guess this nightmare's just the norm. While they're taking shots, just think happy thoughts. Hawk your wares when you'd rather please your base. And you're up the NRA's asshole. Thoughts and prayers.
And prayers.
Do not save lives. Try
gun control.
I'm not going to apologize for thoughts or prayers.
Legislation. Honey, what a waste. Gross inaction can gain you traction if you just copy and paste. More thoughts and prayers. When the problem's getting worse, quote your favorite Bible verse. So compassion is so in fashion, cause no one cares. It's a dog and pony show. Keep your holy rosary on the shelf. Thoughts and prayers.
Do not
save lives. Thoughts and prayers. Take your thoughts and prayers and don't fuck yourself.
Randy Rainbow.
Because you're dumb.
Yeah, because you're dumb. Thoughts and prayers. I thought that might cheer me up a little bit. Hopefully it cheered you up a little bit. Today is weird. But then again, it's a weird week, in a weird year, in a weird decade, in a weird century. It's just surreal. Weird maybe is the wrong word. So I happened to turn on the stream of CPAC. Yeah, CPAC is going on. Oh, my God. And Sean Hannity's talking now. Should we listen for a moment? I won't put him up on the screen. The keynote speaker today was Viktor Orban. That's right, a dictator from Hungary. This is who these people look up to. That should tell you all you need to know. So what is Sean Hannity blubbering about?
We believe in lower taxes. We want less bureaucracy.
You want a dictatorship.
Out of the way and let us bring that natural talent that God gave us to fruition.
What?
This is not complicated. Conservatism is not complicated. Especially if you believe in the concept of natural law, which is that
natural law.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
All men.
That they're endowed by the thing.
Whoops.
You know the thing. I'm watching that and I'm saying, holy Adam Schiff.
Okay, fuck you. Just Sean Hannity.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
And why do I say that? Or sing it, as the case may be? Because this is what they had on that stage just, what, an hour ago? Maybe two? This is the shit they're spouting as he's talking about, you know, the creator, because obviously that's what he didn't want to say. Yeah, you can take your little fantasy book and shove it up your ass, Sean, because this is what you worship. Have a listen to this crap.
I protect the institution of marriage as the union of one man and one woman.
Bigots. All
family
of them.
Ties. Family ties shall be based on marriage or the relationship between parents and children. To sum up, the mother is a woman, the father is a man, and leave our kids alone. Full stop, end of discussion.
You leave my kids alone. Are you kidding me? That dictator dares to come here and dictate what we do, and these people give him a standing ovation. Oh my God, if you don't think we are in deep, deep shit, you're not paying close enough attention. This is frightening. This is who they look up to. This is who they worship, and they call us extreme. So, okay, I wasn't here yesterday, and I apologize. Obviously, I'm not in a great place dealing with a lot of shit. And then this stuff on top of it all? Honestly, you know, we're talking about leave it. Well, we have to move. Talking about going to Arizona. Arizona had their primary this week. And on the Republican side, or I should call it the authoritarian side, they nominated the people who, you know, who are aligned with the orange balloon. People who believe that, who believe the lies. Or if they either believe the lies or they're really fine with fabricating more lies and overturning the results of a free and fair election. They were backers of the coup. Many of them were there on January 6th. Many of them were storming the Capitol. This is where we are. This is where we are. And this is also the group that maybe, you know, so Nicole Black is saying Arizona's running out of water, may not be the best place to go. The whole West Coast is running out of water. I'm less concerned about the lack of water and more concerned about the lack of democracy. So, you know, we may hold off until after the election, because if they elect this Carrie Lake woman governor, not only will I not be moving to Arizona, I won't set foot in that state. And I'm thinking we need to just leave the country entirely. So here's my question. Where do we go? Where do we go? Because there's nowhere in this country I want to be, especially if they put Ron DeSantis in the White House. Look, Trump is bad. DeSantis is worse. And the rest of the country better realize that really soon. I'm going to play for you a short video. This is a video, I believe, that NBC News was on an NBC newscast. And it tells about something that, you know, the man I affectionately call moron death sentence, or, you know, Ron of Satan, one of his policies. You know, as bad as Texas is on textbooks, Ron DeSantis is already putting it in action, his rewriting of American history. Just listen to this report. And yeah, I have to get some Florida teachers on the show, because what's happening here, gee, I've never been happier that except the day that the mass shooting happened at a local school. By the way, the jurors who are deciding on the sentence for the Parkland shooter, today the prosecution wrapped their case and they took the jury and the press to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, where that building still stands. 4 years later, that building is still there. And they talked about, they went inside and the pools of blood on the floor are still there, but they're dry now. The building is still there. I see it every time I drive by. But that's an aside. Here is what's happening in our Florida schools, because we're the extreme ones, and this is what the governor is doing. This is what he is telling our teachers to teach our children. Just listen to this.
Some areas of Florida's new training for civics education is sounding an alarm for some educators.
What they did was present a single perspective as the only one, the correct one. They cherry-picked evidence.
Justin Vogel, who will start his 12th year teaching in St. Johns County, was at one of these trainings launched by the governor as part of his Civics Literacy Excellence Initiative.
The state of Florida has funded a 3-day civics excellence teacher training, and we have the first 2,500 teachers that are going through that now.
Teacher training?
Broward County, yeah. And also attended the training. Both educators looking to deepen their knowledge for their classrooms, until they say they were shocked to learn what they were expected to teach their students.
As educators, we don't necessarily tell them how to think. We give them all the evidence and we allow them to come up with their own conclusions. And that's something that wasn't presented at this workshop. They told us what to think and what our opinions were, and it was very unsettling.
They say while some parts of the training were factual, some material was very concerning. For example, NBC News obtained the slides for the presentation from the Florida Board of Education. Here are some slides the teachers say raised red flags.
It's not a misconception.
One, titled "Opposition to Slavery," worried Barbara and Justin that it could become very easy for new educators to miss the nuances of history.
Putting myself in the shoes of a first or second year teacher, seeing this slide, it's very easy to say that George Washington and TJ were both very anti-slavery.
TJ.
You know, they did everything they could, notwithstanding the fact they both owned slaves.
And there's nothing wrong with viewing it as complicated.
Right. I mean, our country is complicated.
Yes.
We reached out to the Florida Department of Education about the concerns raised by some educators, and they responded in part that our civics instructors are teaching true and accurate history. Every lesson taught is based on history, not ideology or any form of indoctrination. It is important to understand that all Florida civic standards were created and developed by Florida teachers with Florida students in mind.
Bullshit.
The training, made available to nearly 3,000 educators, has drawn mixed reactions. Although some educators attending the training raised concerns, when announcing this initiative, the governor was joined by one who was excited for its launch.
Excited
for it?
There's a
lot of enthusiasm, and we are grateful for the investment that you've made in our space, not only for the students, because that's really important, but also for us as professionals.
This training is one of many legislative changes rolling out in Florida classrooms, and they're firing up strong reactions. Florida's controversial so-called Don't Say Gay law and the Stop Woke Act banning schools from teaching critical race theory both went into effect in July, all while classroom culture wars continue to make headlines in recent years.
A lot of that had to do with COVID shutdowns. That suddenly schools were in the news and lots of people had strong opinions about what schools were doing.
There are people using education as a political weapon, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
And even through the gray areas of a culture war, curriculum debates are not exactly new.
So curriculum has always been a sort of battleground for political fights in education. These fights over questions like, how do we teach about American history? And how do we teach about race or the separation of church and state? And that is a reflection of how bitterly divided our politics are.
But the focus for these teachers is simply to do their job, to teach. They say they want trainings that help them in the classroom.
I don't want them to get rid of it. I want them to fix it. It needs to be fixed.
I agree. I don't want to see this go away. These are our standards for the next decade. I would have just liked to have seen a better, more fuller way to present the material.
Now, this concern comes just months ahead of the November midterms, where lawmakers' messaging around education will likely play into campaign efforts to attract votes. The Florida governor has not been shy about tapping into hot-button issues, often inspiring widespread impact on trends across the Republican Party. His views on what should and shouldn't be said in the classroom might be working. One recent poll showed that voters in key battleground states approve of education policies and even rhetoric that has been widely popularized by DeSantis, like the ones targeting race in the classroom.
So people are approving of DeSantis's whitewashing of history. I don't know how else to put it. That's what's going on, isn't it? I used to say, oh, they're rewriting these textbooks in Texas. It's not only Texas. Not only Texas. And here, Florida seems to be ground zero for the crazy. I guess it is time to whip out Boca's new Florida state song. Do I have it handy? I do. Take it away.
Boy, Florida, the deadbeat paradise. Only good for a quick visit or to die. Rotting mangrove swamps, inhale all you want and pass out from just one whiff. Old and cranky Jews, angry Cubans who welcome you with a shaking feet.
All right, that's enough of that. I'm angry, in case you couldn't tell. Yeah, and I'm not making any friends. In fact, I'm pissing people off left and right. So if I've somehow insulted you today, I apologize. By the way, today is Thursday, and Howie Klein is usually here on Thursdays. He's not here again today. And this is the third week he's not here. So some of you have been asking, where's Howie? Well, now I can tell you, because he wrote about it at downwithtyranny.com. Howie had surgery again this past week. He was diagnosed with thyroid cancer this time. And those of you who've been listening for a long time should remember that, you know, Howie battled a very rare form of cancer before I had the lung cancer. So we're going back 7-8 years now. And he's still been undergoing treatment. I don't even ask me what form of cancer it was. It was just a rare, very aggressive form of cancer that he was treated beautifully because he's on Medicare. It was all paid for, but he had to have surgery, and I guess they removed his thyroid, so now he can't speak because his throat is, you know, he doesn't have use of his voice. Hopefully by next week he will be back, but you can also go over to downwithtyranny.com or find Howie at downwithtyranny on Twitter and send him your best. I'm sure he'd appreciate hearing from you. So, that's why I didn't tell you before, because it wasn't my place to tell, but he does have a post-op.
at Down with Tyranny, in which he talks about busting out of the hospital and leaving against medical advice before the doctor said he was ready to go. And I worry about that because I tried that once. And I was told if I left, then insurance can not pay for anything. So needless to say, I didn't leave. So hopefully that's not the case with Howie. All right. So let me give you a little bit of good news. Okay, because we don't get that often enough. In fact, I even have a good news sounder, and hopefully I won't get copyright violated on this because they all go by fast enough.
Tell me something good.
Good news blowing in your window.
It's sure kind of good.
Good news is knocking on your door.
Good, 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 good.
Good news, good news, good news.
All right, so a bit of good news because I don't get to share enough of it. Good news story number one, and it comes from Attorney General Merrick Garland, of all people. He announced today that four current or former Louisville police officers have been charged in connection with the killing of Breonna Taylor in March of 2020. You remember Breonna Taylor. She was sleeping in her bed when the Louisville police entered her apartment using a no-knock warrant and started firing and killed her. Well, now these four current or former Louisville police officers were charged, charges including falsifying information on the search warrant that led to the raid in the first place, and then attempting to cover up the false information after the fact. Lovely, right? Garland said the alleged wrongdoing, quote, resulted in Ms. Taylor's death. Breonna Taylor should still be alive. Well, you got that right. You think? Wow. So that's good. So federal charges now lodged against Joshua Janes, Brett Hankison, Kyle Meany, and Kelly Hannah Goodlett, which variously include excessive force, civil rights violations, and obstruction. It's about fucking time. And yes, I will give a round of applause to Merrick Garland for not letting this issue die. Breonna Taylor deserves justice. She can't get her life back. Prosecute those cops. Another piece of good news, I suppose. After the shocking revelation yesterday that Alex Jones's attorneys had accidentally sent years of his text messages to the lawyers for the Sandy Hook plaintiffs, the plaintiffs' counsel today said in court that he does plan to turn over those messages to the House January 6th committee. He said various federal agencies and law enforcement had asked for them, and he revealed that they include, quote, intimate messages to Roger Stone. Now, part of me says, ew, and part of me says, okay, how intimate are we talking here? Because we really need to know this. Not that I really want to know, but really, we need to know. And Jones' legal team, of course, started the morning by asking the judge to declare a mistrial because they screwed up and gave the plaintiff's attorney all the contents of the Alex Jones' cell phone by mistake. The judge said this was like the 17th time they were requested a mistrial, and the answer is no. No. That's a big no. The Senate today adjourned, but just for a day. They'll be out tomorrow, but they come back Saturday. That's when the Senate will begin considering the $740 billion budget reconciliation package that would reform the tax code and tackle climate change. Again, Saturday afternoon sets up a weekend of the Votorama, so the Republicans aren't quite going on their August recess yet. So that's a little bit of good news, right? There's some bad news, too, but, well, maybe we'll get into it with our guest. Because my friend Jason Leopold has the ability to turn a shitty day much better. So
With that, hold on 1 second. Let me get his shot all set up. I see Jason's here and ready. Oh, man. Give me 1 second, Jason. I'll be right. Well, you know what? I'm going to bring you on, and then I'll just adjust the shot so we can talk while I'm doing this, because I can. Hey, Jason Leopold. How are you?
Hey, Nicole. How are you?
Great to see you. Great to see you. Now, you're in a clean office. There aren't stacks of papers and things behind you.
I'm in a new office in my house.
Yeah.
That went through some, renovation.
Okay.
So the stacks of paper, I wish I could turn my screen and show it to you, but they are all in, I think I may be able to do that. Let's see if I can do that.
They're on shelves.
Let's see. Can I do it there?
I see.
Ooh. They're actually in boxes. So I've got to, I've got to unpack them and restack them on my shelf. So okay. Maybe for good Zoom video.
Gotcha. So you didn't necessarily finish reading all those stacks of papers. They've just been moved around as you did some redecorating.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you started a new job.
I did. I started a new job about a month ago now. And I am on the, I joined the investigations team over at Bloomberg News.
Okay.
And, I worked for BuzzFeed News on the investigations team there for 5.5 years, as you know.
Yep.
And so it was sad to say goodbye to that.
But now they pulled the plug on the whole unit. They just ended the investigative news division.
Yeah, they offered, they basically, back in March, I think it was March when they had their first, BuzzFeed went public.
Right.
Through a SPAC last December. I'll let, won't say anything about SPACs. I think there's plenty out there about that. But when the earnings report came out, now that they were, that they were public, it was not great, to put it, bluntly. And so BuzzFeed offered buyouts to a number of different desks. And investigations was one of the desks that they offered a buyout to. And so I accepted it and, started along with all of my colleagues. The investigations desk doesn't even exist anymore. So, and look for a new job. And essentially, really what I wanted to do, Nicole, is nothing different. I just wanted to shift what I was doing over to a new outfit. And so I spoke to a number of different media organizations, and Bloomberg was really great, amazing editors, and I'm really excited to, to work with the team here. It's a really, really big place, so I'm not used to working for, big, large news organizations.
A big place owned by a little guy. Now, you were in New York to meet your new bosses and all that. Did you meet Michael Bloomberg?
I did not. I did not. I do understand that, he sits in the newsroom, I believe, with everyone. I don't think
really
that's a secret, but everyone, it's a very collaborative environment. So everyone is sort of, there aren't any offices. Everyone sort of is together. Which is really nice, but yeah. So really I'm just, I was just really excited to be able to shift my operation over here, and that includes my FOIA operation as well, which is really important to me. And the funny thing is about BuzzFeed, when I started in 2017, I had, as you know, worked at Vice News prior to that.
Right.
And when I went over to BuzzFeed, this was right as Trump was sworn in as president, and so our mandate was to essentially, keep tabs on, on Trump and investigate a wide range of issues that, he was involved with. And I remember the resources that BuzzFeed at the time threw at us, that we could just, pretty much tackle any kind of story.
Right.
Travel anywhere we want, take out whoever we needed to take out. I just remember saying at the time, gee, I wonder how long this is going to last for.
Yeah.
And it lasted for 5.5 years. So I feel like we had a good run. You know, I'm proud to say that, you know, in those 5.5 years, you know, I was a finalist for the Pulitzer twice.
Yep.
So
yes, you were.
We did a lot of groundbreaking work. We unredacted the Mueller report, to a great extent. And, you know, the volume of records that we shared with the public as a result of all that FOIA work, I think, you know, became part of history, you know, so.
Without a doubt. And look, you are known, you're known as Jason Leopold, the government called you the FOIA terrorist. I call you the FOIA master. But you've made a name for yourself because of this investigative work that you do. And it's not married to the news outlet at which you work, which is great. It's you. It's Jason Leopold, the FOIA guy. And it comes right with you where you go. And so Bloomberg is going to have you keep doing the same type of work?
They are, yeah. They've expressed, you know, great interest in continuing that. And I'm really excited to share with the newsroom here how I do this kind of work, but how they can do it as well, and how we can really incorporate, you know, the Freedom of Information Act into, you know, the news gathering process. And I think that, you know, given the enthusiasm around it, I feel like we'll really be able to make an impact.
Oh, without a doubt. Now, and I'm sure, you know, you can put on seminars on how to go about getting materials from FOIA. In fact, you know, when you tweeted out that you are going to Bloomberg or any story, and I know in the past few days you've tweeted quite a bit about the FinCEN files,
right,
that you were instrumental in breaking. We'll get to that in a moment. And when I read the comments, I always see people saying, Jason, I learned from you. I followed your guidebook and was able to get all kinds of info. So there are already people who are learning from your process because you've really figured out how to navigate a very bureaucratic department, if it's even a department. Yeah. I don't even know who administers FOIA for the government.
What I refer to as the FOIA police, if you will, that's supposed to ensure that agencies adhere to the law is the Office of Information Policy, which operates out of the Justice Department.
Okay.
And they are supposed to ensure that all of the other agencies within the federal government that they're following the rules of FOIA. And every other agency has, you know, their own FOIA regulations. So it falls upon, you know, them as well, those agencies as well, and officials there to administer it. So each agency has a FOIA office. It's not very well staffed.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's why, you know, you may often see me, you know, shaking my fist and complaining on Twitter or elsewhere, because there's no incentive, right? Where they're trying, there's no incentive for them to, hey, we want to get these records out very quickly.
Right.
You know, it takes a very long time. In fact, I was just telling a colleague that I just received a set of documents, you know, from an agency that I waited 8 years for.
I have a screenshot that I'm going to put up as you tell us what it is you got, because this is ridiculous.
Well, this is from the Defense Intelligence Agency, right? That's the agency that Mike Flynn used to head.
Yeah.
And the records I asked for from the Defense Intelligence Agency were records from when Michael Flynn was there, but I asked for it right after he was fired.
Wow.
So that is, you know, a number of political cycles long ago. But it took a lawsuit for them to finally get around to processing it. And that document that you just showed is what they gave me, where you can't even read it.
You can't read it. So the text that's on the page had been photocopied and shrunk so many times that you can't read it. And you see boxes where they, I guess they told you what the section number or something, what, but nothing, it's all Greek. It's nothing makes any sense.
Yeah, it's indecipherable. I mean, those boxes are what they refer to, you know, as the exemptions, right? That's what they were supposed to redact. But the other parts of it,
you were supposed to be able to read.
It's frustrating. It's beyond frustrating. This is what, you know, been waiting years and years for. And in addition, you know, this is an agency that I also asked for records related to their communications with Robert Mueller's office, you know. So I'm still waiting for that. And anyway, point being that the agencies, like the Defense Intelligence Agency, routinely, violate the law when it comes to FOIA, because FOIA says you have to respond within 20 days, provide records. That obviously is never really the case, but they're not processing the records in any timely fashion.
So there's no rhyme or reason either. Sometimes you'll get things fairly quickly, which is all—it's all relative. And others, you wait 8 years to get gibberish.
Yeah, and it falls upon me, obviously, to once I do get those records, to try and figure out how I can still make this somewhat newsworthy or interesting for the public. It's a huge challenge now, particularly because you have a news cycle that is constantly churning out, scandals and breaking news, that it's very hard to keep the public's attention on any one particular topic. So it's competing with that news cycle is difficult, but I still feel that obviously asking for these records and bringing the public into my process and showing them what goes on behind the scenes, I think is really valuable. And I think that is what ultimately resonated with people who started to practice it on their own.
Yeah, I think you're right. But Jason Leopold, as you mentioned, but you don't stress enough, so I will. It's not only your FOIA prowess, you get all the information, but then it's having the ability to read through it, know what you're reading, pull out the pertinent parts, and interpret it into a news article that informs the rest of us. In the past couple of years, one of your biggest projects was something that I think you got the ball rolling on, and it got so big that it wound up encompassing the Society of International Journalists or something? The FinCEN Files is what I'm talking about.
Oh, the FinCEN Files. So the FinCEN Files is, yes, that was the, the big massive 2-year project that I led based on leaked records.
Right.
Those records were leaked from the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network from a whistleblower whose name is Natalie Maya Edwards, heroic whistleblower who saw some really, she raised a number of red flags. She saw things that were happening on the inside and how the agency wasn't responding well to a wide range of issues, much of which had to do with the way in which they investigated money laundering and the ways that the banks facilitated money laundering and other financial crimes, and how oligarchs, for example, were using these financial institutions to hide their money. And now what we're seeing is sanctions against the very same oligarchs that, she had raised red flags about and that we had reported on, in the FinCEN Files. It's really amazing with that project because it's almost 2 years ago that we published it. And it's one that has ongoing impact. After we published this, Congress passed the Corporate Transparency Act, which was the most significant anti-money laundering reform in more than a decade, if not longer. And so they're still, and that came as a result of, what we had, or partially, I should say, as a result of what we disclosed. So we're continuing to see that kind of impact. It's been amazing. And she, May, that's how she refers to herself, yeah. May Edwards, she was in prison. She was prosecuted and sent to jail, and she served 6 months in jail.
Wow.
For the disclosures, and had her own life turned upside down.
Yes. Now I'm looking at a tweet that you put out 4 days ago, and you wrote, "It's National Whistleblower Appreciation Day," and I didn't realize that I missed it. But you celebrated by writing, "Show yes. some support to @3_whistleblower, the heroic FinCEN Files whistleblower who made an enormous impact around the world." And then you wrote, "May, thank you. Thank you for your sacrifice and your bravery, and thank you for trusting me. You deserve all of the recognition." And, so I'm retweeting this now. So if you want to chip into May's GoFundMe, as you said, her life was turned upside down.
Yeah. Thank you, Nicole.
And I'm, we know... Edward Snowden's name.
Yeah.
We know Reality Winner's name. We know Chelsea Manning's name. We don't know Mae Edwards' name as much. I've only heard it from you. Is there a reason? Because she was every bit as heroic as the others, wasn't she?
It's interesting. That's funny that you put it that way, because the Washington Post wrote a story about her right. It was last year. It was right before she was going to report to prison. And they said that she was the most important whistleblower of our time.
Wow.
But hardly anyone knows her name. I don't know. I think that with Edward Snowden, the records that he revealed certainly, or that he leaked, certainly revealed the extent of U.S. spying, and came right after, James Clapper testified to Congress. These were highly, highly classified records. And so there's always a tension, because things are, are classified, like, Reality Winner as well. What they were being charged with, certainly espionage. It's difficult for me to say. The one thing that was interesting is there was, even though we had 400 journalists that we collaborated with on the FinCEN Files project, there was some pickup by the New York Times and Washington Post, and certainly some other news organizations, but no one sort of really swooped in and made her, cause to, their personal cause or
right,
anything
right.
like that.
And, if you remember, Jason, when that story broke, I thought, and I told you this on the air when we talked about it, I expected this to be like the front page, huge, big financial, all this stuff about international money laundering, and you ripped the blindfold off and said, "Look what's going on here." I thought it was going to be everywhere, and it wasn't.
It was really also difficult during that time because it was COVID, right?
Yeah, right.
COVID was, we came out with our stories in September 2020, COVID hit in March.
That's right.
And it was just, competing with, people were dying.
Yeah.
This was difficult. The fact that it actually, got the kind of recognition that it did, certainly at these, awards like the Pulitzer as being right. a finalist, was just remarkable, because everything was COVID or, a social justice story, and rightfully so. So, I feel like that is why it's, what's amazing is that it has that kind of impact 2 years later, where it's still being, a story or project investigation that people are pointing to,
yes,
you know, as a reason that these changes, you know, these legislative changes need, you know, to take place around money laundering. Right. And like I said, you know, you see that now with, or at least, you know, over the past few months when we started sanctioning, you know, these oligarchs. The thing about that that's kind of not been spoken about is that the U.S., you know, U.S. law enforcement and regulatory bodies, they knew about these oligarchs already because they actually had the documents, as we revealed in the FinCEN files.
Right,
I mean,
right.
They were alerted to their suspicious activity. You know, it took a, you know, an event like the invasion of Ukraine to actually get, you know, to get some action. But when it comes down to why, you know, certain whistleblowers get attention and others don't, I mean, it's hard to say. It's maybe there's you know, that there's not as the dramatic elements that, you know, that are involved or not aired out, you know, and certainly in this case.
Right.
I haven't told my story about really how we met, you know, all that, you know, how all that went down. I'm not going to do that, you know, because I think that is, you know, at least not now. Whereas, you know, with Snowden, he stepped forward right away.
Right.
You know, May did not actually take credit for anything until well after, actually, I shouldn't say well after, until after she was sentenced, right? So the project, the FinCEN files had already come out, and she didn't take any credit for it until after the government sentenced her. And that was, so that came out in September 2020. She didn't take credit for it until last June.
Wow.
In June 2021. Because we didn't want anything to sort of, you know, interfere with, you know, her court case or
sure,
you know, in a negative way.
Right. No, I get it. And, you know, there's a couple other things too. It's money laundering, and you're talking about international banking, and, you know, it gets very intricate. Indeed, it's not sexy. Right? And then you, with Snowden, you had Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras go over there and do the sit down and do the interview, and that was sexy. Although today you look up and what the hell happened to Glenn Greenwald?
Yeah.
Whoa. Do you know?
Oh, with Glenn, no. I mean, honestly, I don't follow Glenn Greenwald.
Nor do I. Nor do
on Twitter,
I.
So I don't.
Gotcha.
Pay attention.
Right. See, so
I know that some people may think that's.
No, because, you know, he's gone off
I really
the rails.
Don't. I don't pay attention.
Went off the rails.
And it's funny with Twitter. You know, it's increasingly become such a toxic place that I find myself, you know, what am I tweeting about? For the most part, it's about, you know, out anniversaries on certain records. I'm still struck by, like, such and such record is 30 years old.
Right.
Holy cow. How
yeah.
did that happen?
40 I'm years so old. Old, 50 years yeah. old. Yeah.
50 years old. You know, this was released 50 years ago.
It's amazing.
And just sharing, you know, my documents. And
right.
That's pretty much it, because, man, it's just, you can just get down.
And it gets ugly. I hear you. And you're right. And that's, but I hate to say it, it's a reflection of where this country is today. Jason Leopold is with us. He is a newly hired investigative journalist over at Bloomberg, still doing his FOIA stuff and more. Are you working on a story now? Or have you begun working on?
I'm working on a bunch of different stories. I mean, and it's, you know, I haven't published anything yet, by the
right,
way. So
right.
I'm hoping to publish something soon. You know, you probably know me well enough, Nicole. I'm
always
I'm really
working on
antsy,
something. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, yeah, so it's, you know, what's great is that there's great editors here, a number of different resources that I, you know, can utilize. So, yeah, should have something out there hopefully soon.
Good. You know, I wanted to talk to you earlier this week when the news broke that they killed Zawahiri. Because you did a lot of Zawahiri. Yes, you did a lot of coverage of, you know, the 9/11. Well, the detainees, certainly at Gitmo. I didn't even realize he was still alive, because we don't hear a lot about Al-Qaeda these days. Was this a big deal?
Oh, yeah, I think it's a very big deal. And I think the fact that, I mean, that's the key point there that you just made, is that we don't hear a lot these days. But the, you know, intelligence agencies are still conducting these, you know, these counterterrorism operations, and still view, you know, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and you know, offshoot terrorist, you know, groups and organizations as, you know, as a threat. The, you know, it's a big deal, certainly in the context of 9/11, but even prior to that, you know, with the, you know, East African bombings that took place in the 90s. So we're talking about, you know, a person who's, you know, activities, you know, terroristic activities, you know, date back 30, you know, or more than 20 years,
sure,
you know, into the 90s. What that actually, like, what was there any influence that, you know, that he had now, or what kind of a threat, you know, that he posed to the U.S. or national security? I don't know, because I have not, you know, had my ear to the ground on him personally in quite some time. But, you know, for the intel agencies like CIA, which conducted the drone strike, you know, it's a reminder, one, that, you know, the use of drone warfare is still a thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's unfinished business, if you will, you know, for 9/11. I think what's kind of, you know, what I haven't seen really discussed, what I feel like is kind of interesting, is the fact that, you know, there was that link to 9/11, although the 9/11 Commission, you know, if you believe everything that the 9/11 Commission has said in its report, and there was a lot that was withheld from the 9/11 Commission, they didn't have any role, really, a real strong connection to, you know, 9/11. But regardless of that, you know, we're still trying to figure out how to prosecute KSM, who's in Gitmo, for 9/11.
Still there.
So,
wow.
You know, so while this, you know, while a drone strike is, you know, is, you know, took him out, here we are still in the stage of what can be admitted, you know, as evidence in, you know, a military tribunal. And they're still fighting, you know, the U.S. and the defense attorneys, because the defense wants to use torture, you know, evidence of torture to show, you know, how the U.S. obtained all, you know, much of its intel around that, and any kind of confession. So, you know, that's been dragging on for 20 years.
Right, right.
So, yeah. So anyway, point being, I do think it's a big deal. It's probably not a big deal to a majority of the public these days.
Right, right. But it gives Biden his, you know, I got Bin Laden moment. That's, you know, and
it totally does. And right. I think in any other time, you know, it would have been much bigger. I mean, I totally remember the evening when, you know, when I found out, because I was also on the White House briefing call when, you know, Bin Laden was killed, and,
right,
and they had, you know, this background briefing. And that was, I mean, that was huge. That was just, you know, stunning, because that dominated the news for, you know, for quite some time. What was really interesting, and it's funny, just in the context again of, you know, I said, you know, we're much of what I tweet is about anniversaries on albums.
Sure.
Is that, you know, I saw some people say, if you remember 9/11, you know, because it is 20, what, it's going to be 21 years after 9/11.
Yeah.
So there are people who were very obviously very, very young, you know.
Allison was a baby.
Our millennial friends,
right?
You know, who are so young at that time that it's like, yeah, who is this? Why should I?
Right. Why do we care?
Why do I need to care?
Right. So, Jason, there's some breaking news. It happened just a few minutes ago.
Oh.
I don't know if you've been watching the Alex Jones circus trial. Sorry. But
I caught some of it, but tell me. I'm eager to hear this.
Well, the jury is back very quickly.
Oh, boy.
They've... And they awarded the parents of this young boy, Jesse, who was killed, who Alex Jones said it was all a hoax, $4.1 million. That's far below the $150 million that they requested. But the next phase, this is
all
in
punitive.
The next phase is punitive. And that's when I would think the big dollar judgment would come. And this is only the first family of. There could be 26 families who filed suit against him. I know there are a number of these lawsuits lined up. This was just the very first one. But So they start, the next phase of the trial begins tomorrow morning when jurors will be asked to issue punitive damages that are intended as punishment.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. So
that's kind of amazing. What a twist.
Right.
In that trial.
And the thing that happened yesterday when I just happened to be like watching right around that time when, you know, he's just a prolific liar. I guess it's endemic on that side of the aisle. They lie like they breathe. But, you know, he was lying about the he had nothing on his phone, that any text dealing with Sandy Hook. And the lawyer for the plaintiff said, you know how I know you're lying? Because your lawyers turned over all the contents of your phone to us, so we have it, and you're lying. And the judge admonished him over and over again, stop lying. It's just watching that part of the trial has been eye-opening. This twerp.
That was amazing to see Alex Jones's face when the attorney for the family said that, and it was...
It was beautiful.
I mean, and I was looking at the attorney, Alex Jones's attorney, because he was just sitting there. Because he said that they turned over the phone and they didn't even, you know, argue that it was privileged.
Right. Now they're trying to do it after the fact and ask for a mistrial. And the judge said, sit down. This is the 17th time you've asked for a mistrial. It's not happening.
Right.
And now those attorneys are turning over those records from that phone to both the January 6th committee and the Department of Justice and anyone else who's asking for them. So this Alex Jones could and should be going down. He is evil.
Yeah. 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 It's it's really, really heartbreaking to see what these families
I can't imagine
have to go through and, what is being, discussed in court. And it's just, it's kind of awful. And it's just no words, really.
No words. Hopefully there will be justice here. And the $4.1 million is just the first step.
Yeah.
That's damages. The punitive stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I say bring it on. Right.
Yeah.
So, Jason, we went through almost the whole time. We've got like a minute left, and we didn't talk music yet. What shirt are you wearing? I can't see from here. My eyes.
Oh, I am wearing a Max's Kansas City shirt.
Ah. So a venue, right? And not a band.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Where Lou Reed used to hang out. Yeah. And
no, big. I never was there, but I know of it. Certainly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just decided it feels like a Max's Kansas City day.
It works for me.
I don't know. I was talking, it must be subliminal. I was talking to someone about New York and all these clubs in New York, just disappeared.
Oh my God. CBGBs.
Yeah.
And but that's the big one. There's one more that I'm thinking of that I used to go to on the Lower East Side, and I'm drawing a blank now. The Ramones used to play there all the time. Maybe it's just CBGBs.
CBs?
Yeah.
Well, there's CBs. There's the Limelight. The Palladium.
The Palladium. I know all the Limelight was this old church that they converted into a club. It was right when I was living in New York. And that place, there was something, a non-practicing Jew here. But going in that church and seeing the decadence going on, it was something always just very weird about it.
The decadence was unreal.
It was true.
I went there you know, religiously, no pun intended, in the 90s, you know, and I saw so many amazing bands. I saw Pearl Jam.
Really? You know, at the Limelight. Wow.
And I was there, and was there when they filmed, you know, the video, which became the video for Even Flow.
Okay.
That's right. Right when they came out,
early,
that was my time when I worked at the record labels. But that was an amazing place. But yeah, anyway, all these clubs in New York are just, the legendary ones are just
going
out.
Like everything's changing. Yeah. I mean, LA, I don't even I see pictures and I don't recognize it. And you know, I've been gone 20 years, so go figure.
I will say though, in the defense of LA, that like you still have the Troubadour.
Yes, thank God.
Which is awesome.
No, it's my home away from home for years. Yeah. So
The Troubadour, the Roxy, the Whiskey, you know, those places are still there.
The Forum's back.
The Forum, you know, now you have, you know, the LA Coliseum. Yep. And there's a bunch of new clubs downtown that they converted, you know, all these theaters, all these old Art Deco theaters into, you know, into venues. So,
yeah, I remember the Mayan they had converted when I was still there, but that was the first.
Yeah, right. there's still some, you know, some great places.
But and, the Viper Room is now gone.
The Viper Room?
It's gone. It's gone.
No.
About a month or two ago, it's gone. I think they're
what?
Knocking down the whole building. The Viper Room closed a couple of months ago, and I think that whole strip area is being knocked down for a new building going up there. Yeah.
Oh, this is like right up the block from me. How did I not even hear
this? I don't know.
This is crazy.
Go take a look and you tell me what's there. Yeah, Viper Room is gone. So, you know, time marches on.
Yeah. It's a bummer.
I'll tell you, we're in overtime now, Jason. So, this weekend, Hulu had Lollapalooza live, you know, live streaming. And this is when I know that I'm old, because I looked and not only was I not interested in any of the bands, I didn't know most of them.
Oh yeah.
I didn't know most of them. That's okay. Yeah. That's it.
That's the part where that's when I feel a little old, is when I'm like, I don't know who that is.
I know.
But also, since we are old, we can just talk about what we did before everyone else.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the first Lollapalooza, you know, because I was there, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
And but that was 31 years ago.
Well, that's the thing. Boy, in the blink of an eye, all of a sudden, wow, that was you know, I said something the other day. Well, that was 91. That wasn't too long ago. And someone in the chat room said, yeah, it was. And I'm thinking, you know what? Yeah. It was. It was 31 years ago.
I know. Unbelievable.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Jason Leopold, the good news is I may be moving further out west. So maybe I'll get to see you. We're looking at Arizona, but you know, being what happened in the primaries on Tuesday,
it
depends what happens in November, because frankly, I got to get out of Florida because this DeSantis guy is fucking dangerous. I'm trying to warn the rest of the country. They're not listening to me. He is scary. He is worse than Trump. And I'll say it over and over and over again. Today, did you hear what he did today? He suspended a state's attorney, an elected state attorney in Hillsborough County. That's the Tampa Bay area. A Democrat named Andrew Warren. Why? Because Warren said he refused to prosecute certain crimes, including those related to performing abortions and alleged sex changes for transgender minors. So death sentence there, suspended him. And you wonder why that party had Viktor Orban be their keynote speaker at CPAC today, because that's where they want to go.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, I hope you can, move out to LA.
Well,
great to have you.
Find me a job. You need an assistant?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, at this point, I'll go wherever I can find work. We'll travel. Because I love doing this show and I love my listeners. I think most of my listeners are like me, though. They can't afford to pay for a podcast, and I'm not behind a paywall. Right. So my donations have just plummeted in the past couple of years. And it's not sustaining anymore. So either the donations come up or I got to find something else to do.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, this is all.
Well, let's catch up, Nicole.
Off the air. Definitely.
And let's talk.
Well, let's do it. All right. Jason Leopold, okay. For the time being, find him, of course, on Twitter, at Jason Leopold. You'll find him at Bloomberg News. As soon as you publish a piece, we'll blast it out so everyone will know.
Yeah, I will definitely be blasting it out there.
Without a doubt. And I will reblast it. Thank you, Jason.
We'll talk sending to you love. Soon.
Okay, you take care. Thanks, buddy.
You too.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. The awesome Jason Leopold. I just adore him. He's one of the truly good people in this business. And with that, we're done. I will leave you with the news. Tomorrow, I'm not sure if I'm going to be here or not, to be honest with you. I'm just, don't know. Not in a great place. So if I'm not here, I'll put on a great show for you to enjoy and have a weekend. And hopefully Monday, Will Bunch will be here because he's got a new book out. And on Tuesday, I think Laffy's back. So either I'll see you tomorrow or I won't. Either way, keep the faith, baby. I'll talk to you tomorrow or Monday. All right. Here's the news. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Senate has had quite a run of successful bipartisan votes over the past couple of weeks, beginning on June 23rd. When they passed that gun safety bill by a vote of 65 to 33. The CHIPS bill, that's the semiconductors bill, that passed July 27th, 64 to 33. The PACT Act finally passed on August 2nd, 86 to 11. And then yesterday, the NATO bill, approving NATO membership for Sweden and Finland, that passed 95 to 1. Next up, the Inflation Reduction Act. Unfortunately, that one will not have bipartisan support. There are still two major obstacles to overcome before Chuck Schumer can advance the legislation. They are Senate Parliamentarian Elizabeth McDonough and Senator Kyrsten Sinema. As we worried she would, reports are that Sinema wants to kill the provision getting rid of the carried interest loophole. Now, if you still don't understand what that is, let's check in with MSNBC's Stephanie Ruhle for an explanation.
Carried interest is a share of the profits that private equity or hedge fund managers take as compensation. It's a performance fee. And under existing law, this money earned by these executives, a tiny group of the most highly compensated business people on earth, they get taxed at a capital gains rate of just 20%. Why does that matter? Because that is about half the typical tax rate of other high-income earners, which is why politicians on both sides of the aisle, as well as voters who actually know what this thing is, have been demanding it gets changed for years and years.
So they need to get rid of it anyway. But Sinema wants to protect her very wealthy donors, I guess. The thing is, this accounts for about $14 billion in funding to help pay for the $780 billion package. And although that's not a lot of it, she also wants to include some $5 billion in drought resiliency funding. Now, that drought funding is a good idea, and it's much needed, but she wants to do away with a provision that'll pay for it? The Washington Post is also reporting that Sinema appears to question the bill's 15% corporate minimum tax, an idea that she seemed to endorse last year. Other news outlets like Bloomberg and Axios also have similar stories that show a lack of clarity in what she wants to do on the corporate minimum tax. So there's the Sinema problem. And then there are still some issues that may be vulnerable to a Byrd rule challenge as we await the final word from the Senate parliamentarian, who, by the way, has no time constraints on her review. So we wait. Some members of the Senate waiting impatiently as they want to begin their August recess. However, if they are able to take up this Inflation Reduction Act legislation, the Votorama will likely run through the weekend. Stay tuned. Let's take a break from the hard news, the 1-6 investigations and everything else to check in on the sideshow going on. It's happening in a courtroom in Austin, Texas. That's where conspiracy and hate talker Alex Jones appears to be finally held accountable for his lies and attacks on innocent people. In this case, he's fighting a defamation lawsuit
filed by the parents of Jesse Lewis. He's one of the 20 children killed in the massacre in Newtown, Connecticut at Sandy Hook Elementary. Jones is the blowhard founder of InfoWars, and he's falsely claimed repeatedly that the 2012 elementary school mass shooting was a hoax. Again, 20 of the 26 people killed that day were children between 6 and 7 years old. Now, the trial wrapped up yesterday. It's now in the jury's hands. It was both serious and involved some gut-wrenching testimony, but it can also be described as a comedy of error for Jones' defense. Jones described one particularly perfect part of it as a Perry Mason moment for the plaintiffs. The lawyer for the Sandy Hook parents, Mark Bankston, produced text messages from Jones' cell phone showing that Jones lied under oath. Jones claimed for years that he had searched his phone for texts about the Sandy Hook cases and found none.
Mr. Jones, did you know that 12 days ago, your attorneys messed up and sent me an entire digital copy of your entire cell phone with every text message you've sent for the past 2 years, and when informed, did not take any steps to identify it as privileged or protect it in any way? And as of 2 days ago, it fell free and clear into my possession. And that is how I know you lied to me when you said you didn't have text messages about Sandy Hook. Did you know that?
I told you the truth. This is your Perry Mason moment. I gave them my phone. And then,
Mr. Jones, you need to answer the question.
No, Did you know this happened?
No, I didn't know this happened.
Mr. Jones, in discovery, you were asked, do you have Sandy Hook text messages on your phone? And you said no, correct? You said that under oath, Mr. Jones, didn't you?
I mean, if I was mistaken, I was mistaken, but you got the messages right there.
You know what perjury is, right? I just want to make sure you know before we go any further. You know what it is.
The lawyer, Mark Bankston, explains, you know what perjury is, right? Ooh. In another notable moment during cross-examination, Jones was asked whether he had connected the judge overseeing the trial to pedophilia and human trafficking. Jones denied having done so, so the lawyers played a video for the court that featured Jones leveling such an attack. So the case is now with the jury. The families are seeking $150 million in damages, and this is only the first one. Jones has been sued by several of the Sandy Hook families for his relentless peddling of conspiracy theories related to their personal tragedies. Karma's a bitch. And Rolling Stone is now reporting that the House committee investigating January 6th also plans to subpoena the phone contents, the text messages from Jones. They'd like to know more about the contact Jones had with Donald Trump's team ahead of the attack on January 6th. The lawyer, Bankston, said that he fully intends to comply with any local, state, or federal law enforcement investigations. Remember, the Justice Department is also looking into January 6th. Let's get back to the actual news, okay? President Biden on Wednesday signed a second executive order seeking to protect abortion rights in the wake of the Supreme Court's June ruling overturning Roe v. Wade. This one directs the Department of Health and Human Services to consider using Medicaid to cover travel expenses to, quote, defend the bedrock right to travel across state lines to seek reproductive health care in states where those services remain legal. Sounds about right to me. And of course, today we're still celebrating Kansas. Really never thought I'd say that, as the very conservative state, the first one in the nation to test a ballot initiative on whether or not the people want to take away women's reproductive rights. And overwhelmingly, they're telling the government, keep your hands off our bodies. You go, Kansas. And while Kansas is headed in the right direction, you gotta wonder what the hell is going on with the Republican Party in Georgia, where the Department of Revenue there announced that parents can now claim fetuses as dependents on their tax returns after about 6 weeks of pregnancy. What? The state's personhood provision is currently the most expansive in the country, you think? It also requires that fetuses be included in some population counts and imposes child support, quote, on the father of an unborn child. All righty then. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports, and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on one of those donate buttons.